Every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point, a belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk of trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Locker Group at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. What has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and the lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the seasons where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. This is Dreaming Big. And so let's dive in. Today, I get to speak with my friend Cameron, whose story is going to inspire every single person listening who's ever doubted whether they had what it takes to build something extraordinary. He's the co-founder of Invisible Technologies. Cameron is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, Inc., and his views are his own. Now, Invisible Technologies is a company that just raised $100 million at an over $2 billion valuation in September of 2025. But here's what makes his story so compelling. He dropped out of college to help build this company from the ground up. He started as head of operations, personally interviewing and hiring every single agent on the Invisible team. He wore every hat imaginable, from tactical execution to strategic planning, and his co-founder, Francis, has said that Cameron has earned my undying respect for his warrior spirit, relentless effort, and cheerful, optimistic attitude. Now, Cameron has moved on to launch his own venture called Ascendancy within the Invisible family, and his journey is a masterclass in what it means to be resilient, resourceful, and relentless. Cameron, welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm so happy that you're able to join me.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Alexis.
So I know that you have a super interesting background, but I really want to start at the beginning. So you were in college, and at some point you made the decision to leave. I would love to have you walk me through the origin of your professional journey and what that looked like.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I was getting my bachelor's. I was an undergrad and 17 years old, so graduated high school early, got into college. And at the same time, I had joined a few friends and my cousin to start a business called Invisible Technologies. And so I was very much drawn to learning. And to me, university is this kind of final stage of learning where you're going to learn the most. And also this new business that I'm starting with friends is this huge learning opportunity, right? We're doing amazing things together. It's towards an amazing vision. So I was naturally drawn to that. But once both of those things got to a bustling start, I realized I probably can't do both of these. Ultimately, I decided which place will give me the most learning. And after spending a few months in college trying to kind of get the best professors, get the toughest courses, I realized I actually still wasn't learning that much. The flip side, building this business where I had no prior entrepreneurial or business experience, and I was by far the most junior person on the team, I was learning every single day. And so I thought hard about it, but it was a no-brainer decision to ultimately drop out of school, focus on the business, and pursue learning in that dimension.
So cool. And it obviously takes a lot of courage to make that decision. But what did Invisible look like in the early days?
I mean, it was like many startups. You're trying to build the plane while you're flying it. Invisible was originally kind of birthed out of a few different themes of ideas that Francis, our now chairman, but then founding CEO, had ideated. This idea that the biggest problem in the world is the number of solutions and the coordination costs to actually use them all. If there's an app for everything, why isn't everything fixed yet? It's because you have to spend time actually using that app, opening it. And the same goes for business, the amount of services, vendors, et cetera. And then a couple other themes around that, this idea of invisible technologies being the best version of technology when it's invisible, when it feels like magic. technology is at its best. And then this idea that services are best when you combine the best of people and technology, not just trying to do a tech only approach, but figuring out what can get out of that. And so six of us founded the company and were ambitious towards chasing this vision and had this energy of anything is possible. Nothing's going to stop us. So we had a rocket ship for 6 months, got a bunch of funding, got a bunch of clients. We're building technology and things hit a wall when you're on a rocket ship, everything needs to go right. And if you're going to continue to accelerate at that peak, you need the fuel, you need all the systems working, you need the crew on top of what they're supposed to do. And if one thing's off and other things are off and so forth, it kind of falls apart. And so there's the whole kind of deep dive into what didn't work then. But after a very fast start in 6 months where we were kind of all in, we actually ran out of money. And that kicked off a period of the dark days of building a startup. Frankly, a lot of people at that moment in their own businesses decide, you know, this was a good run. Let's go move on and figure out something else to do. But a few of us in the business were very obsessed about this core idea of what we were building. We felt that the problem we had identified, that there are coordination costs that are getting in the way of progress, human progress, progress in people's businesses and their lives, was a real problem. And also selfishly, I wanted to start a bunch of businesses myself. And I can't imagine starting them without Invisible. So why not start this operation service that can then help me run the operations on all of my other businesses? And so we kept at it. And so for about 2 years after that, we had little to no money. We were kind of scrapping money here and there. We had a client pay up front for a year. We rebuilt our technology with the learnings of what didn't go right the first time. We had reorganized our operations. We had reorganized how we service clients. Our whole business model changed. So that's a glimpse into the early days. And looking back, there's 100 ways we could have done things better. But that learning journey was important to develop some of the leaders that are still at the company today. And obviously, Francis still at the core of the vision and thinking about what's happening, the pain of going through that process helped create what the business is today.
It's a very practical startup experience where in the very early days, you're just so focused on surviving. And for you guys, you obviously had really early success, but maintaining that is really hard. And I think that that's a reality that not a lot of people talk about. And it's just really impressive that not only kind of did you resurrect the business, but you had a ton of learnings to apply going forward. And then also were probably able to prove to yourselves that you are capable of being really scrappy, because I know that for quite a while, Invisible hadn't taken on additional external funding to the extent that it has recently. But it really goes to show kind of the resilience to be able to accelerate and build an incredible business. You know, you mentioned Francis, and when I was reading a little bit about the two of you, he had said that he had asked you to do the impossible, and he's watched you do it with a smile on your face. You have warrior spirit, relentless effort, and cheerful, optimistic attitude that always inspires me. I would love to hear about when you think about your own leadership and how, from both maybe the early days and the later days, what does that look like to you and how has it evolved?
It's a big question. I'll hit it from like what it looked like back then and then get to the how it evolved later. But when we started Invisible and as we were going through those early years, there were a few books that became very internalized in Francis's psyche, shared that with the team and my psyche and the rest of the team's psyche and so forth. One of those is a book called Agakure, which is the book of the samurai in kind of the transition period between the age of the samurai and the Tokugawa shogunate. And one of the sayings is just to be insane and obsessed to die, something along the lines. And it's terrible advice to give someone, but if you put yourself in that time period, these are people that are going into battle and there's no option of retreat. And when you're on the front lines, the thing you have to do then is channel your energy to the singular focus, be obsessed to reach that end state and hit kind of the milestones along the way. And this is relevant because we had such strong alignment in what we were pursuing at Invisible, the core mission, the core problems we were looking to solve. And this idea of being obsessed about the outcome and not letting anything stop you was very resonant. And then you become unstoppable. So that very much captured the essence of the first couple of years with the addition of having a smile on your face. And I think if you could somehow be insane and obsessed about your outcome and have us do that with a smile on your face, that outcome is rooted in a mission that at the end of the day is really core to you, then that's I think what life is about in terms of channeling all of your energy to that thing. And I think thankfully it also allowed us to live a simple life, a very straightforward and clear life. I would argue today my life is much more complicated and it's harder to do that because what about the risk of losing money? What about the risk of losing these relationships? Or what about this? What about that? What about these other responsibilities I have? So building a startup is definitely not for everyone, especially if you've amassed a certain amount of responsibilities that, again, are core to your life. And then to do it with this smile on your face. So it was easy to do that being young, but the logic I had back then, which makes sense to me now, is what use does being pessimistic or being sad do? You should be realistic, but you should be excited about what you're doing. And if you're not, you should reevaluate that and recalculate. And there's definitely tough days, definitely days to frown and not be happy. But you should need to somehow be able to transcend that. And so I'd say on the whole, I'm probably smiling more than maybe the average person in my shoes, but it's difficult. I think my recommendation is be optimistic in life. Be realistic, but be optimistic. But that's a bit about kind of what defined those early days and kind of how it's played out over time.
The way that I know you is a really great balance of humility, happy, and intensely focused on the things that you care about. When you're building a company, especially when that can be the only priority, it makes a lot of sense that your happiness is reflected in the success of the business. And so, especially in the early days when things can be volatile, it is very natural for your success indicator to be based off of that and therefore your overall happiness. But I think that you have a unique nature of being really optimistic generally. And you have to be optimistic because as an entrepreneur, you have to be able to dream big. It doesn't, many people, doesn't work out.
Yeah. And it's also recognizing that you have only one life to live. And as each day ticks by, that you're not going to recover that day. So just be really aligned with what you're doing. And if you're aligned with what you're doing, hope for the best and shoot for the best. I listened to a podcast recently. It was Ferrero Rocher, Michele Ferrero, who was his father kind of officially founded it, but passed away shortly afterwards. And it was a very small local Italian business at the time. And so he took over the business when he was young. I think he was maybe early 20s, something like that. And his father had passed away. And after he had taken over the business, he went to the factory and kind of announced to everyone on the factory floor that this is my life's mission. And I'm going to make sure that you and your families are taken care of for the rest of your life, as long as you work here. And that sense of long-term clarity and basically that statement of saying, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, was basically the force of what propelled him to success. And he became one of the richest men in Italy. He recently passed away. His family is still one of the richest families in Italy. Never took investment from outside investors. And I think it's difficult for us in today's day and age to pick something we want to do for the rest of our lives, but at least pick a direction, at least pick a theme, right? It's less about occupation and it's more about the energy you want in your life or the accomplishments you want to do. Just think bigger picture. If you think about your future like a painting, you don't have to detail out the exact figures or figure out your color palette, figure out the frame that you want to put the painting in and then work around that. And that even though that's not like exact clarity of like, this is exactly what you're going to do, that little bit of clarity is going to be a helpful guide that every decision you make, you can put within that frame. Does this fit in my color palette? Does this fit with the frame? And so that sense of purpose allows you to then think optimistically.
You certainly have a strong setting of purpose. And I think, you know, you have now co-founded a separate company that is really rooted in relationships. And maybe we can transition and talk a little bit about that and what you're building now and also how, from my perspective, so aligned with kind of who you are as a person.
Yeah, thankfully, Invisible has become successful. But in the process of its success, Invisible actually decided to stand up an incubator and incubate other different businesses that are adjacent to what Invisible is doing. And so I started a business within that framework, and Invisible and my new business, Ascendancy, are connected in that way. My new business, Ascendancy, interestingly, decided to create it in a similar way as the thought process of what led to Invisible and also what led to us sticking at Invisible after it had failed. Once Invisible reached a certain point where I could hand off my responsibilities to someone who could do it even better than I could, I went back to my entrepreneurial desires and I said, okay, if Invisible's succeeding and it can be something that can help me with other businesses I want to start, and it's also helping some amazing businesses out there in the world that everyone interacts with every day, what do I want to do in my entrepreneurial pursuits? What's the next step in this lifelong journey of entrepreneurship? And so I went to the drawing board. I have a spreadsheet with like dozens of different business ideas, some very fleshed out, some not fleshed out at all. And I realized, man, even though I'm going to start a lot of these, there's going to be a lot I can't start in my lifetime, even if that's a long lifetime. And I said, how can I support the most amazing founders doing these wonderful things? And I said, you know, I could advise these companies. I've gone through a lot, especially in certain areas. I can give my two cents. I can invest in them. I'm extremely well connected. I'm a kind of naturally an extrovert and be happy to make connections for these folks. Then I realized, you know, why not start this as a business? Why try to do this as a person? Why not create the ultimate business that can help founders grow their organizations through networking, through advising, and ultimately in some ways through investing as well. And so that's kind of the origin of how Ascendancy came about. And as we've gone building this organization, which is that the business is very much giving CEOs kind of this unfair advantage of being able to open doors to whoever they want to meet in whatever sphere. We're partnered with them as their main advisor. We use technology on the back end. We're building out a platform for ourselves to basically get really good at pairing people that want to meet for different opportunities. An investor wants to invest. Founders looking for investment. Okay, is that a match? And 9 times out of 10, it's not going to be a match, but how can you kind of pre-vet and pre-filter out those preferences so that you can actually pair the two people that you know are actually going to want to work together? And so through this process of building this business out, we've realized that speaks to a lot of the core themes that Invisible had when it was created. One in particular is that technology services are at its best when you combine technology and people. And as Invisible has been kind of core to the AI story, and we've helped train a lot of the foundational models that people use every day, and we've helped apply them to real world businesses, I really think we need to channel this technology to really help us be more human. And I actually think there's a negative trend in this direction right now. We're being less and less human. It's not even about AI. You take AI out of it. I think the ease of connectivity and knowledge with the internet, which is in many ways amazing, has also led us to not want to interact with other people as much. And Ascendancy is all about, at the end of the day, connecting humans together that are doing amazing things. And so this human connection is important, one, for businesses and how to build your business, but also more broadly for us as humans. If we are not actually trying to advance our relationships and our thinking and our humanness, then we're just basically offering our sovereignty up to technology.
Both of the companies that you've started are solving such massive opportunities and problems that are basically infinite, which is really cool because that's massive target addressable market. But more importantly, they're solving problems that people face on a daily basis in a way that is scalable. In the world that you kind of focus on, and you alluded to it a little bit, but so much of it comes down to the people. It's the relationships. It's how you work together. I have fortunately been able to know a number of people that, you know, work in the Invisible sphere, and they're all extraordinary people. And so I would love to just hear from your perspective what you think makes the culture so strong, especially given the incredible scale and growth that it's had, both from a people perspective, but also from an international and global perspective.
I think two things. One is demand the best from people, and two, care for them as humans. And a lot of companies do one of these, but not the other. You'll get really elite firms that demand the best of people, and they will, in many ways, get great outcomes, but they burn people out at a fast rate, or they don't get a good reputation, and that ends up coming back karmically to bite them. It's ultimately an unsustainable ship or hard to run ship if you're just demanding the best and kind of full intensity, full high bar standards. And then there's lots of companies, especially in the last 15 years, that care deeply for people, but don't demand the best. And what you're just going to get is an unsuccessful business. And the two have to go hand in hand to be able to, let's just say, give someone a long maternity leave or encourage someone to really rest if they're sick, the business is going to need to pay for that or it's not going to be able to function, right? You've got to make sure that you're actually building a foundation that is actually growing, successful. And so I think we did a good job of combining both of those two things. Definitely not perfect. It's not black and white. There were times when we settled for less in certain areas. There were times when we could have been more thoughtful for people. But I think on the whole, we did a good job of combining those two things. And that trickles down into every aspect of the business. It trickles down into how you even look for people to hire, how you vet them, how you bring them on board, train them, etc. It comes how you deal with promotions and how people develop. It comes out in how you deal with clients. And it's actually a beautiful fusion because when you demand the best and care deeply for someone, you're actually saying like, hey, I want you to be promoted because that's the best for you. It's also the best for us. And it means like when you're operating at your top performance, I want you there. And not just promoted to this level. Like I want you to take my job. And best case is I'm learning as well and I can keep rising up as well. But you have to really desire both of those two things and they end up working beautifully together.
I think that you said that perfectly. So I'm sure that there's a number of people that are listening who maybe have a big dream and maybe they're considering leaving a stable job or maybe even considering leaving college and they're thinking about starting their own company. I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what advice would you have for people like that? And then on the practical side, you know, how do you know when you're ready?
What advice do I have for someone considering what they want to do next is do what you love. Don't be afraid to ask yourself big questions. Be patient with those questions. Writing down your thoughts is really helpful, or at the very least, doing something that is reflective. Do that on a somewhat regular basis. And you should be asking yourself, what kind of life do you want? What do you want in your life? And then play that back to what you're doing right now and ask yourself, is what I'm doing right now on the path to that? And if the answer is no, don't do that. I mean, it could be an interesting path. It could be like a curvy path, like that's fine. But definitely do not do something that is going in the opposite direction or even not fully in the direction of what you're looking for. And sometimes it could be a hard decision, right? It could be like that you have to quit your job and go look for a new one or go do something else. And there's this kind of risk of like, you're not bringing in income, you have expenses, and that's stressful. I think the best answer is go through with that difficult action and try and find the right answer. There's all sorts of versions of success. There's like not one level of success, but there is definitely what not to do. Like if you're not following that direction in life, then you're doing something wrong. And I don't think it ever changes, right? I think if you are 2 years into a business that you do love, like keep asking yourself that question. I myself, especially in kind of long holidays, I will have like a long reflective day, sometimes multiple days where I'm like zooming out all the way and saying, okay, what do I really want? How am I progressing towards that? What needs to be pivoted? You're never ready. You might be more ready or less not ready than other times. And so just ask yourself realistically, when do you want this thing by? And then what are the steps you should take to get there? Just be very simple about it. Like don't detail out this 100-step long plan, but just say, okay, well, I want this. Am I ready for it? Maybe not in these areas. So I'll take this step to address that and that step to address that. And so it's okay to take your time with it, but you're never going to be in a place where you're completely ready.
Very good, very practical advice. I always like to end with some fun rapid fire questions. So if you'll indulge me, quick answers. Best advice you've ever received?
I'll answer this with a non-answer. I was thankful to have very loving parents growing up, and my dad was very inspirational, a little like Tony Robbins as a father. And I will actually say the repetitiveness of what he preached was helpful. I don't know how he does it, but he will like talk about the same thing every day for 3 months. And you're like, I've heard this again and again, like, I don't need to hear it again. But it seeps into your mind, and you remember it, right? And so I'd actually say it's a common theme of advice that I've gotten that's been very valuable is actually repeated advice. So figure out how you can get yourself in an environment surrounded by the people or the things that give you the right reinforcement on a regular basis.
I love that answer. What is the first thing you do every morning?
When I'm living a healthy life or an unhealthy life? When I'm living an unhealthy life, I will turn off my alarm and look at my phone, check emails, look at them, et cetera. if I'm living a healthy life, my phone won't be near me. I will go to it, turn off the alarm, and then immediately get into some healthy routine, like do a quick workout, etc. And so that latter answer is definitely better, but it's some weeks it's more the former than the latter.
It's an honest answer. For you, what does living a rich life mean to you?
I recently visualized having a certain sum of money and what I would do with that sum of money. Like a very attainable, like, okay, in 2-3 years, what do I want to do? And it's like amazing the different things I can do with that money. I'm going to live an amazing life if I'm successful and can come into that and the people around me will benefit. It'll be beautiful. But then I asked, what is not addressed with that money? Like 2 years from now, I wake up in the morning, all these things are true that I've done. What is still missing if nothing else has changed? And there were a couple of small answers, but like the big thing is ultimately health, physical health, mental health, spiritual health, the health of your relationships. And that's something you can affect and change today. So I think richness to me is living a healthy life in all those dimensions. And to me, spiritual being probably the most important, but also physically healthy. So you can go out and live a great life, mentally healthy, have great, amazing relationships. So a rich life is when all of those are checked off, even if you have $0 in the bank.
Love that. And for you, what are you dreaming about next?
Breakfast.
Hey, I love the honesty. It's perfect. You know, look, you and I could talk so much longer about a number of different big ideas. And I know that obviously you're working on a number of different things. But for those who are looking to continue to follow your journey and ascendancy, where can they go to find you?
They can add me on LinkedIn if they want and shoot me a message there. And feel free to send me anything, any ideas, any messages. The world is full of abundant opportunities. And for your benefit, I'm also running a business that's all about networking. And so maybe I can help you and help figure out a great path for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the conversation. This is so much fun.
Can't wait for the next, Alexis. Onwards. Ciao.
That was Cameron, co-founder of Invisible Technologies and now founder and CEO of Ascendancy. If you want to follow Cameron's journey, you can find him on LinkedIn. As always, if you love this episode, subscribe to Dreaming Big wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. Share it with someone who needs to hear Cameron's story today. Remember, your credentials don't define your potential, and your work ethic, your character, and your commitment to growth do. Keep dreaming big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'll see you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.